Hey everybody, and welcome to the WWE Podcast. This is your week in review show, and there is a lot to discuss with Otis being the focal point of SmackDown, WWE blatantly disregarding their draft rules, the Intercontinental Championship Tournament, and the awesome evolution of Seth Rollins' character. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get going right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
All right, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is, Saturday, May 16th, 2020. Losing track of days. You know, this whole corona thing has got me just every day seems like the last in some instances. And I don't know about you guys. Just every day is kind of like just one big lump of time ever since we've been brought home from work. Thank you guys for joining me on this this Saturday evening, if you're listening to me, or probably after Saturday. And there's a lot to discuss this week. I'm doing this week solo. There is no co-host tonight. This is just me discussing the week in review. I haven't done a week in review by myself in many months. So I figured I would do that tonight just to see how it goes. Not that I'm going to continue this trend, but to shake it up a bit. I know that co-hosts are one of the most valuable things that we have on this show, and they'll be returning shortly. It's just for tonight that I was doing this one solo. I know that some of you actually fall asleep to this show. So, hey, if you fall asleep to this show, that's great. I don't know if I should start doing some ASMR stuff. I don't know. I don't know, but apparently something about this show puts you to sleep. I don't know if we'll take that as a compliment, but I guess thank you for listening either way. So we're going to get to the week in review with tons of items to discuss. But first, go and follow us on Twitter. If you haven't done that already, go ahead and do it. It's at the WWE Podcast, and on the website at WWEPodcast.com is where you can find all of our shows and some blogs and some other cool stuff on there. And I encourage you to go and check out the website, as we will be utilizing that much more than we have. And what I mean by that is probably adding some video, getting more writers to contribute to the blog section the opinion section of the website. Because I know I like to make sure that our views are diversified. It's not all of just my opinion coming to you. It's an array of people with their own thoughts about what's going on. And so that is going to be something that I'm going to look at increasing over the next few weeks. So keep an eye out for that. And if you want to support the show, the best way is to really just tell a friend or review us on Apple Podcasts. That is really the best way. And if you want an ad-free experience, head on over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast, and you can get the entire WWE Podcast library absolutely ad-free. So check that out for those that are interested in not being interrupted by ads. I know ads can be a pain in the neck. I understand. I listen to podcasts myself, and I try to take different elements from podcasts I listen to and note in my brain, this is what I liked, this is what I didn't, and try to minimize the bad and maximize the good. But the fact of the matter is, if you have a podcast and it's successful, it would be foolish of you not to want to monetize it. I mean, it just wouldn't make any sense. So I know that the ads can be a pain in the neck. I get it. I understand. But there is an option to go ad-free, and there's also the skip button. So for those of you that have Apple, I know that the Apple App Store podcast app has a 30-second skip ahead button. I'm not telling you to skip the ads, because I do want you to listen to some of the ads that I do, because I really do believe in the people I work with. But the programmatic ads that are in there, I don't have any control over that content. So I get it. So anyway, all right, let's move on. Let's get to WWE. I just wanted to bring that up front because I know that that's the number one complaint with the show. And it's it is what it is. It's not going anywhere. And, you know, it's just a part of when you want to monetize your passion, just part of life. So, all right, let's move on to WWE, as I said. And there's a lot to talk about today. There's really a lot going on in WWE for being an empty arena show. There's a lot of content. A lot of content to cover, really. And I'm going to start off with the last thing I saw, because that's how my brain works. And that is the Otis version of SmackDown that we just saw. And that occurred last night, so it's the most fresh in my brain. And I'm curious to what you guys think about this. You know, Otis came in as Heavy Machinery, part of one half of Heavy Machinery. And there's always a very clear star in a tag team. Very rarely do you look at a tag team and say, you know, these guys are absolutely equal. I can't see either one being a bigger star than the other. It doesn't happen very often. I mean, even look at the Hardy Boys. Jeff Hardy was clearly the star on that team. Animal and Hawk, the Road Warriors. Animal, I think, was much more of a standout than Hawk. You look at, well, okay, maybe you could say Jimmy and Jey Uso because they're identical twins, but they are much more the exception than the rule. New Day, you can make an exception that, or an argument that Big E is actually the most underutilized guy on the team. All right. I mean, so there's always that star, and Otis came in and was that star right off the bat. He gave a different vibe. He looked different. He was kind of the happy-go-lucky, lovable, kind of lovable. I want to say lovable loser because it just flows off the tongue, but that's not really what he was. He was just kind of like the lovable guy in high school that never really got all, never got the pretty girls. He wasn't the jock. He was like the guy that was the shot putter on the track team. And he wasn't in a real prominent position. Maybe he was even a fullback, right, in football. He could even pass as a lineman in football, I should say. So he was never the star athlete, but he was always the really nice guy with the big heart. And that's what I think WWE is after right now with Otis. They have really defined him as a kind of that lovable, non-traditional type of WWE wrestler. And he stands out because he does funny gyrations and his fat jiggles, and he wears shirts that are, you know, a quarter of his size, and Vince likes to accentuate his abdomen. And they've defined him as kind of that lovable guy that likes to eat food, and they're always making food jokes. And we're all supposed to laugh along that he has like a stromboli or something in the briefcase of the Money in the Bank briefcase. And he did the whole awful, and you guys know what I think about this, the absolute eye rolling, made me want to turn it off, embarrassed. I felt embarrassed to be a wrestling fan watching the Money in the Bank ladder match, men's and women's. And I don't really care who thinks I'm trying to get clicks. I don't really care if you think that it's something that I'm just saying to get a reaction or go to the extreme to whatever reason, I don't really care. The fact of the matter is that's what I believe. That's what I felt. It was absolutely eye-rolling, and everyone that was involved in producing that match should be ashamed of themselves. Now, obviously, the actual performers in the match, the men and the women, they're doing what they're told. They're there to get a paycheck and earn a living and feed their families. That's not the problem. They did as instructed. It's the producers, Vince McMahon and company, and the writers that write only for Vince and not what is necessarily the right thing to do to keep their jobs to satisfy Vince and not what the probably majority of the audiences find appealing. And really, the pro wrestling fan today has been redefined. And maybe that's why I'm getting so much resistance on Twitter from many of you who, oh, it's just entertainment. And you know what? You could say I'm the old fuddy-duddy. At 30 freaking 5 years old, if you really want to call me that or the whatever, I think you may want to take another analysis of what your definition of an old wrestling fan or the whatever kind of wrestling fan I am. but I think the wrestling fan of 2020 has been defined, redefined, as a wrestling fan that somehow enjoys this just awful attempt at, it's not comedy, it's not wrestling, it's not even cinematic, it's just a terrible, it's like the worst of the worst that you can do for pro wrestling. And as Jim Cornette said, and he tore this apart just beautifully, tore it apart beautifully, and I don't mean to get on a rant about the Money in the Bank ladder match. I'm getting back to Otis in a second. But Jim Cornette is a guy that is known for his criticism of the modern product in WWE. And you know what? I think not all of it is warranted. I think even I think that he is the... goes a little bit overboard sometimes to just get a reaction. But I agree with about, I don't know, probably 80-90% of what he says. And he tore the Money in the Bank ladder match apart and said there should be a special place reserved in hell for the people that produce this. It was great. It was great. And I loved it. So I know many of you are either new to wrestling that listen to me, I've gotten you back into wrestling, or you've been longtime fans. And I know to many of you, I am like the anti-hero of podcasting. I know that many of you probably view me as this guy that just complains about everything. And that's not the case, because I have a lot of good things to say. And if you listen to my show, you would know that it's not all complaining. But the thing is, I'm not going to give WWE a pass just because I should look at it through the lens that you do, that it's just entertainment, take it easy. Well, that's not how a company that relies on emotional investment to make money successfully. That's not how you should view it. If I'm WWE, I would want to, my goal would be to make fans emotionally invested, not to quote entertain them on a very superficial sports entertainment-y, killing kayfabe type of way that is an awful attempt at whatever they were trying to attempt. That's not what I would do. And I think WWE has lost vision of that. And so anyway, back to Otis. See, damn Money in the Bank ladder match got me again. But anyway, I know I'm the anti-hero of podcasting to many of you. That's cool. I'll play the heel. And I'm not, but when I say I'm playing a heel, that's just me giving you my damn opinion. I'm not trying to be somebody. So I'll say I'm playing heel in the wrestling context, but I don't care if you don't agree. Just like you shouldn't care if I disagree with you. But that's what makes this damn thing fun, right? This is all just playing in the sandbox. That's what all wrestling is. So, okay. But to get back to Otis, there's always a star in the tag teams. Always. And Otis was a standout right from the beginning with Otis and Tucker, who has just gone by the wayside. And we got an explanation that from Otis that he was, gotten dysentery from the Oregon Trail, making a reference to, for those that have no idea, if you're a millennial, you know what Oregon Trail Day was when you went to school in the 90s, mid-90s. You just knew what that day was. And Oregon Trail was a beloved video game that was played on the Macintosh computer for many, many years. So he went back and made that reference, of which, if you're younger than millennials, the millennial generation, Gen Z, you probably have no clue what the hell he's talking about. But so Tucker's nowhere to be found. Otis is the focal point of SmackDown, and we open the show with Otis on Miz TV. And I will say again, while I'm talking about the positioning of Otis, they did do something good here. They did more than just make funny, try to be a terrible attempt at comedy with the food jokes, which they still did. It's just par for the course every time you see Otis, and why he has to wear basically a women's tank top to accentuate his stomach for Vince McMahon to be knee-slapping backstage, I don't understand the point of it. But we did get at least a little bit of history with Otis, albeit brief, with The Miz and John Morrison going through some childhood photos of Otis. And so we got to see him at a much younger age. And so we got to learn a little bit about him. Not much, but it did humanize Otis a little bit. And I'm not sure if his if it's an act about, or I should say, I know it's an act, but maybe he should back off a little bit on the act of talking in kind of mumble jumbo. I get it's endearing and it's unique, and nobody in WWE speaks like Otis. I understand all of that, and I get it that it makes him different from the other performers. But it just seems to be laid on a little thick, and I don't want to believe that he in character that he's truly an idiot. And at times he comes across like that, and like I said at the beginning of the show, the analogy of him being the shot putter on the track team or maybe a lineman on the football team, where he's never going to be quite the star, he's kind of in the shadows, and he gets the pretty girl. It's a little bit superficial, and I also don't want to believe that he's also the guy that barely scrapes by in school. And I don't want to believe that, but then again, we also got that confirmed on SmackDown with him saying that he never understood school, but he understood wrestling. There's good and bad to that little expression and that little statement by Otis. The good is that it shows you he had a passion for wrestling right from the beginning. He has a wrestling mind, that he gravitated to wrestling while the rest of us gravitate to wrestling because we love it. We have a passion for the entertainment value of it, the certainly the athletic piece of it. It just draws you to the television screen, and I get that. That's great because he was really one of us. But then it's also a negative because it kind of shows you he couldn't even get through school. He's a high school dropout? I don't know, honestly, the full backstory of Otis. But I don't want to believe that he was just this high school dropout that that made it, just kind of stumbled into wrestling. But maybe I'm probably reading way too much into this. But okay, let's get through this because there's so much more to talk about. This whole Otis thing was weaved throughout the SmackDown fabric on last night's show. And he was challenged by Miz and Morrison to a tag team match at the end of the night. And we have the typical, no one's going to be your partner cliche in wrestling. No one wants to be your partner, blah, blah. And then Otis goes and tries to proposition Sheamus. Sheamus turns him down, which is the right thing to do. I mean, Sheamus is a heel right now. Would have made zero sense. And then it took Mandy Rose to be the one to tell Otis that, what about Braun Strowman? And again, someone has to think for him. And he went and asked Braun, and Braun was skeptical because Otis carries the Money in the Bank briefcase. So you're going to try to take advantage, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, we all know Strowman's going to accept, and he does. So we get the match, and we end up having Braun Strowman get the victory. Pretty straightforward. Not really anything to write home about. It was the feel-good, leave-a-smile-on-your-face mission accomplished WWE at the end of the match and in the end of the show. And my concern, though, is this was about Braun Strowman, not as much as it was about Otis, right? Yes, Braun Strowman is the Universal Champion. But this should have been about Otis. He was the one who was weaved throughout the fabric of the show. Why is Braun Strowman getting the recognition and the victory, so to speak, rather than Otis? But I don't know. They got the victory nonetheless. I was surprised at the end of the show that we didn't see anything from The Fiend. When the match ended, there was just under 2 minutes left, and I said, okay, this is definitely enough time. And instead, Mandy Rose comes out, and they celebrate. And Mandy Rose has been really defined down to just Otis's girlfriend that is still too hot to be with Otis on the surface. We'll have to see where that goes. Interestingly, though, a couple of things. So we end the show like that. No Fiend. This is very surprising. There was no Fiend. So clearly they're waiting till next week to position the Fiend as a Braun Strowman opponent for Backlash, or maybe they went all the way to SummerSlam. Who knows? But it was surprising given that it was the end of the show with a couple minutes left and the Fiend didn't show up to intimidate Braun or whatever. So a couple things here. The whole, and this is a very good thing on SmackDown that I'm liking a lot, as long as the payoff is good, the setup is great, is the whole hacker type of thing. And again, this was a direct ripoff of the show. Again, I know I mentioned this, but this is honestly a direct ripoff from Big Brother a couple of summers ago when they had a hacker type of part of the show and you could hack somebody's selection to be on the block. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you'll know. Just watch Big Brother if you never have, or maybe you haven't, you know what I'm talking about. It's a direct pull from the show, but I don't care. I love this. The hacker thing is great. It's well produced. It creates a sense of who is this guy, assuming it's a guy. It creates what are they after. It shows like the Matrix code going down their screen. A big fan of the Matrix, by the way. It shows him kind of playing God and being able to see all people at all times, and says that the truth will be heard. I'm liking this. I'm glad it wasn't just a one-off for showing who was behind the whole Valentine's Day mix-up between Otis and Mandy for their date, and it became Sonya Deville. But interestingly, though, here's the part. Beyond the hacker thing, which I love, the presentation's great, the voice is great, the mystery around it is great. I'm really loving it. It's keeping me very intrigued, and every time I see it, I'm hanging on every image, I'm hanging on every word. It's got me really, really captivated, at least from my perspective. But every time, well, I shouldn't say every time, this past week, they played this little introduction, but the interruption of this hacker happened right after the Mandy Rose segment. And it's which makes me a little bit nervous that this all was a ruse by Mandy Rose and that she truly feels bad for Otis, right? Like next week, we're going to get something, or maybe the following week, or maybe in a couple of weeks, that we get something from this hacker that shows Mandy Rose on the phone with somebody talking about how, yeah, she pities him and she feels bad. So she's with him because she feels like she has to be, but she really thinks he's disgusting. And she pities him. Like that is how I think this might be playing out, that it's Mandy who is truly the evil person here. And it's not Sonya. So keep that in mind, and it's going to be very interesting to see how and when those segments pop up. Even if there's no information, it's just kind of the standard I'm watching and all that stuff, when those segments play. So keep an eye on that, something to look forward to as we move on in the weeks. That being said, also in this story, Sonya Deville is effing killing it. Is she not? Sonya Deville, in the last few weeks, has done more than in the last few years in WWE. She is absolutely on fire with her promos. I can't believe we're just seeing this ability now in Sonya. I mean, I don't know if she just hasn't spoken up and maybe she hasn't felt confident enough to speak up to say, hey, I want more talking time. I don't need things to be scripted. I want to be able to just go out there and say what's on my mind. And she's just been kind of the good soldier over the last few years, or maybe they just haven't given her an opportunity. And boy, did she take it and run with it. The promo that she gave this week was really good, really intriguing. It was believable. She talked about how her goal is to ruin Mandy's life, and she's just getting started. I like how she's consistent with her message. She's not here and there and up and down. She's consistent about saying she wants to ruin Mandy's life. I love it. Dolph Ziggler was just really there. I mean, he could have just hologrammed in for SmackDown. He didn't even need to. What the hell is he doing there? He just stood there and like was just staring at Mandy as she was, or Sonya as she was giving this promo. But Sonya Deville has been absolutely on fire. You know, she has been a big, big standout over the last few weeks. And every time she talks now, I'm loving it. It's like, where the hell where's this been? Why have you been hiding what this is? And now she's getting an opportunity. So kudos to Sonya. I'm loving what she's doing. So hopefully it continues, and hopefully she comes out on top. The NXT Women's Division here is making its way into SmackDown. And yes, Becky Lynch is gone from Raw, so maybe they feel like they need some star power on the WWE product. But here's where WWE just cannot help themselves. They just can't help themselves. We're getting King Corbin on Raw next week, this coming Monday, to face Drew McIntyre. We've gotten Charlotte coming into SmackDown because apparently NXT is not enough for her, and they want star power on as many brands as possible. And I understand it from a business perspective, and Drew is certainly running out of opponents to Claymore kick in the face on Raw, so you got to bring somebody new. And I get it. I get it, and I'm going to give them a pass simply because of the circumstances we're all in with the virus. And maybe some stars don't want to be there because of putting themselves at risk. Oh, don't worry. We'll get to the Intercontinental Championship being vacated in a minute. But perhaps the virus is a contributing factor for them just completely throwing away the rules of the brand split and when they happen and the draft. I mean, I'll give them a pass simply because of the environment we're in. But I also have a feeling that even if we weren't in this environment and it was business as usual, that WWE would still probably not be able to help themselves and just say, F it, we're going to bring in so-and-so because it makes sense. Or even if the fans go, huh, why are they here? They're going to go, they're here, so that's all we care about. Instead of going, this makes no sense, they're on this brand, how does this happen? And that's my only gripe. And I knew going into every brand split, every draft, that WWE cannot keep the world separate. They just can't do it for the life of them. And so we'll have to see how many more times this happens. But so we get Charlotte on SmackDown, and she's interrupted by Bayley. And Bayley and Sasha come out, and they take shots at each other. Bayley talks about how the last time they were in the ring together, she took the SmackDown Women's Championship from her. All true. And then Charlotte is the NXT Women's Champion, and they tell her to go back to NXT. And inevitably, why can't I say that word? It inevitably, try to say those two words together fast. I don't know. Ends up in a match. And so here's the thing, though. Charlotte tries to play the reasonable voice. Charlotte is trying to play the voice of the people that see what's going on, and everyone sees what's going on but Sasha. And tells Sasha that she needs to be her own woman, and that you are simply Bayley's lackey, what happened. And before Sasha can respond, Bayley cuts her off. And she has been doing that, if you've noticed, for weeks now, cutting off Sasha from not being able to speak. And there was some tension between Sasha and Charlotte, but there was also some facials of understanding and respect there. So I think that I don't even know. I'm scared to say it, but are they turning Charlotte babyface? Or was just Charlotte ambiguous on SmackDown, and they're just doing this to further the cracking of the friendship of Bayley and Sasha? Was she just used as that and also brought star power to SmackDown? I'm hoping it's the latter, because Lord knows we don't need another turn from Charlotte. Charlotte seems to go on these spurts of like, I'm a defined babyface, then I'm a defined heel, then I don't know what I am, and then I'm back to heel. I don't know why they screw with Charlotte so much. I don't know why it's so difficult to see what she's born to be. I don't know why it's so difficult to look at her and say, hey, she's clearly a heel. I don't see any way other way around it. She has played the babyface, and she has been very uncomfortable as a babyface because I don't think she believes in her own babyface character, because her character is not built around being a babyface. It's built around being cocky. It's built around bragging about her last name. It's built around talking about the queen and bowing down, because everything has to end with bowing down to the queen, whatever the F that's supposed to mean. Has anyone actually bowed down? I guess it's just a clever little cute marketing phrase to say, I'm going to beat you, right? I mean, that's just what it is. But Charlotte was born to be a heel, like her father was born to be a heel. It's in her blood. I don't know what's so complicated about this. Charlotte is a natural heel that does an excellent job of being a heel. But I will let this pass because she wasn't a full-out babyface. She was trending babyface, kind of on the ambiguous side. But if it's just to continue the cracking of the foundation of heel of Sasha and Bayley, fine. But it was just a little bit like, Charlotte, no, please, please don't do it. Ay, ay, ay. So, okay. Then we had the Intercontinental Championship tournament throughout the show on SmackDown. And I'm really digging this, right? I'm digging that it's a tournament. Now, were we told how the guys that are in the tournament got put in the tournament? No. But the fact is, I don't need it, because when you look at the SmackDown roster, the people that are in this tournament should have been in this tournament, even if it was a how to get selected to be in this tournament, right? If there was a qualification process to get in here, I would say that WWE did a great job of selecting who should be in there. And that's basically every top person on SmackDown that doesn't have a major championship. So I liked it. I like how they're doing it tournament style. I like how WWE framed how important the Intercontinental Championship is throughout the show. And the fiery promo from Daniel Bryan after his match with Drew Gulak was really well done. Bryan, you know, unfortunately, you kind of forget him on SmackDown because he's not a focal point anymore. And, you know, he's a solid worker, but you forget how good he can be on the mic. And he showed you on Friday night why he's so good on the mic when he wants to be, because he believes in what he's saying. There's a fire in his eyes. And he really put over the belt. And WWE did a great, great job of positioning how important the belt is and the lineage of it, and Pat Patterson winning it for the first time in 1979. All of that was just, it was well done by WWE, because that's how you put over a belt. You could argue the Intercontinental Championship is more prestigious than the WWE Championship. Certainly is more prestigious than the Universal Championship. That's for damn sure. But again, we got the tournament here. We got Daniel Bryan versus Drew Gulak. This was awesome. This was awesome. Why? Not because Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak are great with each other, and the chemistry is just oozing out of them anytime they lock up, and WWE knows that they can just plug and play with these guys, which is certainly a compliment to both, and their chemistry is off the charts. But it was great because here's why. You're going to be really stunned by this. It was a wrestling match. It went back to the old school, here's what wrestling should be presented as. And not every match, of course, I get it. But boy, did this taste different. It's like WWE feeding you Big Macs for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And you like Big Macs, right? Most of us do. And you like cheeseburgers. Most of us do. I get it if you're a vegetarian. Just roll with me in my analogy. And you're eating them. You like them. You kind of get used to them. You know what you're going to get. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they give you a salad. And you're like, what? But your body loves it. Your body loves you for it. This tastes different. It's very different from your palate's perspective. You're wondering, what did I just get? Why do I feel so good? That's what this match was. It was a salad in a row of Big Macs. And I really, really enjoyed the chemistry, as we all did. And here's the beautiful part. Unless I'm wrong, and I'm sure you guys will correct me, was there a single punch thrown in this match? Was there a single punch? I don't think there was. When is the last time there was a match in WWE that didn't involve a punch or a slap? I don't have the answer. I don't know. I don't think it's probably been years. I mean, honestly, and this sounds insane, But I believe the last time that happened without a punch or a slap was probably Austin versus Ric Flair in 2002, the Raw before Austin walked out, when Ric Flair challenged Stone Cold to a wrestling match and he couldn't punch Ric Flair. If he punched Ric Flair, he would be disqualified. Anybody remember that? That was the final match before Austin walked out when he was supposed to face Brock Lesnar in Atlanta and for the King of the Ring tournament or the... It might have been a King of the Ring, I forget. But we all remember that famous story with Austin. But people forget the week before. That's honestly the last time that I can think of a pure wrestling match without a single punch. It was damn brilliant. It was two pros doing what they do best, and that's chain wrestling. Chain wrestling is sorely missed. Why does every match have to start at 100 miles an hour? You know, you are out there to wrestle. And you know what's great? When you start at the ground floor with chain wrestling and, you know, counters and reversals and counters into counters, and then maybe you escalate it into a punch, and then it means more than just starting off punching, because instead of starting in third gear, you're starting in first gear. And that's how you tell a story. I don't want to go into chapter 3 of a book. I want to start at chapter 1 and know the whole story. Again, I'm not advocating every match start like this or every match feel like this, but boy, did it feel different. Boy, did it feel good to see a real wrestling match between two wrestlers. And I liked how Daniel Bryan said the word wrestler. I'm sure Vince McMahon is sitting back there going, and just cringing at that word. But I'm obviously, he probably got permission, a very reluctant permission to use that word, but that's exactly what he is, and it came off great. So, all right, I'll move on. All right, so on SmackDown, that pretty much covers it. I mean, that was the big ticket items on SmackDown. As far as the Raw side goes this week, you know, I did my Raw review from on Tuesday I released it. So I'm not going to go over everything happening on Monday Night Raw because you can hear it. But as we look at the week as a whole, because that's what this show is about, this was a very noteworthy week of WWE because the evolution of the Seth character is really starting to catch my eye. It's no longer this burn it down. I got to say burn it down for every promo because it's my catchphrase. He is evolving very beautifully, and I don't know if this past week he looked disheveled because he may be shocked by Becky's news. Maybe he didn't know that he was going to be a dad, or he's getting over the shock of it, and he also lost at Money in the Bank to Drew McIntyre. But the disheveled Seth Rollins is a Seth Rollins I am paying attention to. Boy, am I paying attention to Seth Rollins. And I love his evolution of a downward spiraled, dangerous, unpredictable, mentally unstable version of somebody that believes they are the Messiah of Monday nights. Got to be careful, right? But somebody that is that mentally deranged and delusional, you add in loss after loss and then being a dad, he is set to explode at any moment. And that was awesome on Monday night. I loved the disheveled Seth Rollins more than any version I've seen of Seth Rollins in the past 7 years. It was great. I don't know if this is going to continue. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to, if it's just a one-off and he's back to what he was as the Messiah prior. But him growing out his beard, him looking just, it was perfectly done on Monday night. So we'll have to see where this leads. I really hope that sometime in 2020, we get a true long run with Seth as champion. As much as I disliked his babyface character as champion, I will love the disheveled, unpredictable, violent, underhanded, delusional Messiah version of Seth Rollins that much more to balance out the dislike I had for his babyface character. So whoever produced this or thought of this and the execution of it was great. I know I'm maybe looking into this a little bit more than I should, but Monday Night will tell me if he's back to being Seth or if he's still kind of disheveled or if he goes through phases of being disheveled. based on what's happening and if he continues to lose, right? But I don't know. So that was a really, really high point for me on Raw, was this version of Seth Rollins that just continues to evolve and spiral downward, and to see him on that spiral down journey is something that I'm on board for. The other big thing that happened on Raw this past week, well, I covered it in my Monday Night Raw review, but to give some additional thoughts and maybe 5 days later some additional perspective and new perspective, this Orton and Edge program that is clearly continuing is something that I don't know if I've seen this before, where they go backwards. They go backwards in a normal linear path that programs take and feuds take. I'm okay with it because it doesn't happen often, so I don't know how I'm going to feel about it if I don't see it, and I don't want to prejudge it. But I have to say, I did miss the fact that these two never had a straight-up wrestling match, and I felt a little bit robbed at WrestleMania, because they didn't do much of anything in the ring other than Randy Orton hitting a couple of RKOs. There wasn't a whole lot happening inside the ring, and I felt robbed by that not being the case. Edge never got to hit a spear in the ring. The ring is center stage. The ring is the lens in which fans view pro wrestling. So to me, backstage stuff can be fun, right? I mean, comedy can happen backstage. You can have brawls backstage. Lord knows we've seen enough of those over the last couple months. And all of that. And it can do special things. But to me, Edge's return was, of course, robbed by no fans being able to be in attendance. But it also felt a little bit robbed of not being able to see Edge in a true match. And I totally am on board for that logic from Randy Orton of saying, you can't beat me in a straight-up wrestling match. I like that logic. And ultimately, what I think is going to happen, if you're putting me on the spot for Backlash, as that pay-per-view is coming quick, a little less than a month now. It's May 16th. I think it's June 15th. I'll have to look at the calendar. So let's say a month. It just sounds better. In a month, it's going to be interesting to see if Randy Orton comes out on top. I think he will. I think that Randy Orton and Edge will come out on top, and this thing ends at the next pay-per-view or SummerSlam in some kind of mega blow-off. Because Edge got his retribution at WrestleMania, and then Orton comes out and says that, yeah, you beat me, but you know I'm the better wrestler. And that got under Edge's skin, and so Edge is clearly going to have something to prove, and he will at Backlash. I don't see any scenario in which Edge does not accept. So I think on Monday night we'll get a response from Edge that says, I accept. I don't know if he'll be there in person. I haven't seen anything that says he will be. But this is going to be a match I'm looking forward to, because it's, to me, truly Edge's return. Like, anybody can do a backstage brawl. I mean, not anybody, right? You have to be in some kind of physical shape, be able to take a lot of bruises and bumps that are going to leave you hurting the next morning. I understand that, right? I'm not saying anybody could do it. Oh my God, the guy off the street. But it doesn't take a whole lot of skill to hit each other with inanimate objects. It doesn't take a whole lot of finesse to whale your opponent with a chair or crush their head between two chairs. It doesn't take a whole lot of that. So from that perspective, I did feel a little cheated at WrestleMania, albeit an extremely long and unnecessarily long match, to a true wrestling match. So that is something that is interesting. I'm also curious to see if, by God, do they allow fans in the arena? Is it possible? With Florida opening up, do they dare dip their toe into potentially bringing fans in? I'd love it. We all would. But it's a month away. Florida's been very aggressive in reopening. Keep that in mind. I would love it. We all would. So, I don't know. That's my personal opinion. I felt cheated on that. And I was very disappointed that they spent 95% of their time outside of the ring. Because many, many last man standing matches have taken place fully inside the ring or around the ringside area, or have started and ended in the ring. I thought they were going to at least end in the ring, and they didn't. They just started in the ring, were there for a couple of minutes, and left, and never came back. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Again, the only thing I did not like, and I severely dislike this from Charlie Caruso's hopefully planted line that this could be the greatest wrestling match ever. I mean, that's just laughable. It's just laughable. So, better than Rock Austin at WrestleMania 17? Really? Oh, yeah, right. As great as these two guys are, I mean, you can't say that with a straight face. You just can't. Oh, I hope they just... I don't know who produced that and who told Charlie Caruso to say that. It was just god-awful. It's just... Anyway, okay. The Iconics being back? Awesome. The Iconics are some of my favorite... And were some of my favorite wrestlers on SmackDown before they became Women's Tag Team Champions and then just disappeared into the ether. They were great. They've got great chemistry. They feel like just annoying, you know what, witches. You know what word I'm trying to say. They feel like those annoying witches that are just the ones that think they're better than everybody else. They're kind of like the plastics from Mean Girls. That's exactly what, if you want to model them after that, she's like Regina George. That's who I would say Peyton Royce is like Regina George. Kind of a guilty pleasure movie. Don't care if you don't, you think I'm kind of weird for liking that movie. Mean Girls, I just don't know why that movie is so damn good. Along with Not Another Teen Movie. Has anybody ever seen that one? I know it's not the most, or the best reviewed movie ever, but Not Another Teen Movie is just, damn hilarious. So anyway, back to the wrestling. I'm really glad that the Iconics are back. It adds a level of credibility and depth to the dying women's tag team division. I mean, it's seriously on its deathbed at this point, and they breathe new life into the women's tag team division. Let's see what else happened here. What is something else? Bobby Lashley seems to be on the ascent. Right, Bobby Lashley seems to be on the move, and that's a good thing. He's distancing himself from Lana. That's always a plus. And is just on a war path. He hasn't lost a match since he's been removed from this Lana situation. And yeah, he lost, but it was of his own accord. Right, he got disqualified. And that's not what I'm talking about. He has been positioned very strong. Which tells me, could Bobby Lashley be challenging Drew McIntyre at some point this year in 2020 for the WWE Championship? I hope that answer is yes. I really do. Or Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar. The key here, and it looks like they've been doing it, the key is redefining Bobby Lashley and re-educating us to what he is and how powerful he is and how strong he is. And they've done that. So far, it's going to take a lot more because there's a lot of damage from Bobby Lashley in terms of, remember his three sisters segment? Remember that just abysmal segment? Or the Lana nonsense? All of it. I mean, there's been so many things that Bobby Lashley's done that you're like, what are they doing with this guy? This guy's an absolute machine. But I hope that they do something prominent with him, even if it's not for a championship run. Him and Brock Lesnar need to have a run in. I mean, please. We've seen Brock Lesnar work with kind of the same cast of characters. And yes, Drew is new for Brock, and that rematch will happen. But I would love to see a Bobby Lashley-Brock Lesnar showdown at some point, as long as Bobby Lashley is redefined and has been redefined for a long period of time. So that means that Bobby Lashley is built for months and months and months as this unstoppable monster, and you redefine and change what people's perception of Bobby Lashley is. And it takes a long time, especially given how long that they've told you, who Bobby Lashley is and how far he can really go. They could really turn things around here, and hopefully they see the money in Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar. So the other thing too, Drew McIntyre has been running through and steamrolling everybody. And I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning because I don't understand why WWE, if they're building a new group, which typically when you build a new group or you debut, you have an automatic get out of jail, I'm going to win most of my matches card. And Andrade, Austin Theory, and Angel Garza, of course, led by the brilliant Zelina Vega, and I don't mean that facetiously, I mean it truly, is that you have this group that's brilliant and a talker that is otherworldly in terms of her ability to make you believe and to feel like she's all in and to make you feel something for this group and make you tell us what their mission is. And then you just have Drew McIntyre, Claymore kick all of that down, figuratively and literally. And I love Drew. And that's the hard part is I don't want to feel like Drew is really pouring cold water on a group that could be something. But I feel like that. At the same time, I want Drew to not lose either. So the point is, and I've said this before, Drew and this group need to stay the hell away from each other. I'll say it again. I'm not gonna tell you again, WWE. You're gonna be grounded. I feel like I'm scolding a child. But I said this before, and Drew and this group ran into each other many times over the last month. They stopped for a week or two, and then I was like, oh, good, they're staying away from one another. And then they're right back to it. I don't know why they want to use Drew McIntyre to have three sacrificial lambs of three guys that have a big and bright future. All three of them. All three of them have a hell of a lot of potential and are just being Claymore kicked down every week. And yeah, they're heels, but they have no heat. They can't get heat. They're built as soon as they get a microscopic amount of heat, it gets blown off by a Claymore kick. I don't like that. And some of you may say, oh, they're heels. No, they should get their asses kicked. I love seeing that. Well, then you haven't really watched pro wrestling long enough to understand that when you have mega heat, you'll have nuclear heat. Not nuclear. Anybody ever have people that say nuclear? It's nuclear, right? I don't know. Silly things that just under my skin. But when you have true heel nuclear heat, you want to see a babyface rip that heel's head off. And instead, we have heels that get a little bit of heat and then immediately gets blown off. And it's like, well, I kind of wanted that to build for a while, right? I don't know. So bottom line, keep these two apart. Please, please let them do their own thing. I know you're hurting for heels and you're hurting for top baby faces. And when you have two good groups, you have a mega baby face and a heel group that gels well together, you got to put them together. No, resist the temptation. You're doing long-term damage. You're not allowing the group to grow. All right. Jinder Mahal was interviewed backstage on Raw, by the way. And he said he was happy for former teammate Drew McIntyre, and he promised his journey to the top this time would be a hero's journey. Does anybody else see Jinder Mahal versus Drew McIntyre? I see it. The 3MB, the actual laughingstock of Raw, could be a main event. And people say, oh my God, that's ridiculous. No, why is it ridiculous? Why is it ridiculous? You know, many people really, really hated Jinder Mahal's title run on SmackDown. I didn't hate it as much as most. I really didn't. At first, everyone was saying Jinder effing Mahal, right? And I did too, because it came out of absolutely nowhere. It was like a Randy Orton RKO. It hit us out of nowhere. But I think Jinder Mahal, over the weeks, did a good job of making you want to see somebody beat the hell out of him. He wasn't Muhammad Hassan. And if you don't know who Muhammad Hassan is, good Lord, go and Google him. From, I think it was 2004 to 2005, maybe 2006, when Muhammad Hassan was a part of WWE. God, you talk about a Middle Eastern gimmick that was nuclear heat. Oh, man. It's a shame that his career got cut short in WWE. I thought his gimmick was damn brilliant. He was believable. God, did anybody else know Muhammad Hassan? Am I the only one who remembers Muhammad Hassan? He was a mainstay but he was in the main event a couple of times. So if you watched during the Ruthless Aggression era in 04, 05, you know who I'm talking about. But so he wasn't, my point is Jinder Mahal is not that level, but he has a piece of that because he's Middle Eastern. He is the foreign menace, right? And he doesn't have a likable face. he doesn't have really any redeeming qualities about him that you like as a fan watching. So that's something that is good about Jinder. And I think this time around he's learned from his previous mistakes as champion. Maybe I would assume he's grown since then. So I'm going to give this a chance. I don't know why people are poo-pooing on it already. But we'll see. I could be totally wrong and he could be god-awful as champion. Or this program could be god-awful whenever it happens. But the fact that they interviewed Jinder Mahal about Drew tells you what they're testing the water on. And to see probably what the fan reaction is. And if you're asking mine, go for it. I think Drew needs new opponents. And I think that that'll be a good thing. So, and it's also a Monday Night Raw, I meant to say, because I can't talk about Monday Night Raw without Becky's announcement. I like how Becky Lynch referred to the WWE fans as fans. Anybody else notice that? She referred to the fans as fans and not, the WWE universe has been so supportive and they got me through. No, 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 no. We're not, you know, we're not out in the stars, right? I'm not out there, you know, floating around the galaxy in the Milky Way. I am a fan. You know what fans are? Fans are people that support the product. Baseball has fans. Do they call it the MLB universe? Do they call it the NFL universe? Do they call it the NBA universe? No. No. WWE is the only one that has to be cute about how they label their fans. So, and you all know how I feel about that term. It's like WWE is trying to create, they have tried to corporatize the fans. As Stone Cold would say, that's not going to happen, right? I refuse to be labeled as the part of the WWE universe. I'm a damn fan. So props to Becky for calling us fans, because that's exactly what we are. We are fans of the WWE. So, all right. So that is essentially, I mean, I know there's a lot of other little stuff going on. I mean, Shayna Baszler seems to be back on track. The Viking Raiders and the Street Profits played basketball. I wish I was kidding about that. But overall, I like the way WWE's position right now. King Corbin could certainly need to use a win. I don't even know if he knows what it's like to win anymore. And this is what I'm talking about not being able to build up heels because you blow the heat off so damn quick. And yeah, it was against Elias in the first round of the tournament. And I'm glad and hope that this program is over between Elias and King Corbin. And it feels like every time we talk about King Corbin that we hope that his program with whoever is over. I mean, look at the thing with Roman Reigns. We were all just, oh my God, please move on from this. Please move on from this. Please move on from this. And they finally did, right? And now he's on to Elias, and we're like, oh my God, can we just end this with King Corbin? King Corbin, as good as he is at playing the delusional heel that thinks he's a true king, everyone's going to bow to him. He's using the same terminology that all heel kings do, that were his subjects, and using the scepter as a weapon. It's not very original. I mean, his outfit and his crown is. It's original, I guess. But his use of being a king in terms of presenting it in a heel character is not very original. And his promos, while they're good, I don't feel much for them. It's weird. Like, he's good, but I don't feel anything for him. And maybe it's because WWE hasn't allowed him to build up heat. But I hate to say he bores me. I hate it. Because he's good in the ring. He's good on the mic. He's got a good look, but I don't feel a whole lot for him. It's nice to see when somebody beats him, but I don't feel like I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to tune in to see somebody beat King Corbin. I don't know. Maybe that's how I feel about him and I'm in the minority, but certainly he has transformed his career. I'll give him that. And I would have him on my roster. Absolutely. He is a very good talent to have. I believe anybody would feel he's a good talent to have. It's just, he's missing something. I don't know, maybe it's just a winning streak. But King Corbin lost this week to Elias, so Elias moves on to the next round of the Intercontinental Championship Tournament. And next week, we get AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura in a first round piece of the tournament, which is good. These two obviously with a lot of history, going back to the Tokyo Dome in New Japan, where they absolutely tore it down, to the main event of WrestleMania a couple of years ago, in which it was honestly underwhelming, and where we had Shinsuke turn heel and go on his low blow binge. So you know, this tournament, honestly, is shaping up to be pretty interesting. You know, this is not an easy tournament to call. There are a lot of guys in this tournament that could easily become Intercontinental Champion. It's not a very cut and dry scenario, and I like that. It's not a clear cut, oh, it's probably this guy or this guy. There's like three, four guys that you go, yeah, I see it. I could see it. And, you know, Sami Zayn, I feel for the guy. They never specified why he can't compete. If you were to ask me, I think it's because of he didn't want to risk his health or maybe his family's health of contracting the virus. And that's what I think. And WWE was probably not happy with his decision. And they probably told him all the health procedures and protocols and safety measures they have in place, of which they do. And he still decided not to go. And I'm sure WWE looked down on that. And it's a shame that they had to strip him of the title. And they just said he couldn't compete and they moved on. I don't think we'll ever get an explanation from WWE as to why he couldn't compete. But it's a shame because Sami Zayn was really starting to get on a hot streak. Damn, I loved his character. The Great Liberator, him and Shinsuke and Cesaro gelled very well. Him as Intercontinental Champion, the program with Braun Strowman, everything got cut short. And it feels like the rug got pulled out from underneath us. And I think he's in the same category of the doghouse as Roman Reigns is. They're all just sitting in the... They've all been like shunned and told to sit in the corner and to go for a timeout. I mean, I feel like WWE figuratively spanked them and told them to go to their room. And with no mention of Roman Reigns, they've just completely erased his existence from the broadcast. And Sami Zayn being stripped of the Intercontinental Championship because he didn't want to risk his health. You can make a case that's silly that he didn't want to risk his health. Or you can make a case that I understand why, even though, you know, a large percentage of the people dying from this virus are, like, you know, 75 and older. I get it. I'm not going to get into the politics of it. I'll be on, that's on another podcast for another time. But if that's the case, then you can make a case for both sides. And I see where WWE is coming from, but I also see where Sami Zayn's coming from. It's a hard side to choose which one to be on. So, but nonetheless, eventually he'll be back. Hopefully in the good graces of WWE, because he has really shown what his value can reach and how good he can be on the mic, how obnoxious of a champion he can be. And it's a shame. But this Intercontinental title tournament, I think, is a smart move. It creates easy television for a couple of weeks, eventually leading to Backlash, where they'll crown a new Intercontinental champion. So it's just kind of a plug and play, easy format to fill time for the next few weeks for WWE. It's smart, and I have no problem with tournaments. I love tournaments. So that's really the gist of what's going on in WWE, guys. And of course, much more to talk about. And if WWE, by the way, could stop using roll-ups as a way to get a victory. Like, in other words, you have this badass match. They're beating the hell out of each other. Like with, for example, Elias and King Corbin ends in a roll-up. After they beat the hell out of each other, it ends in a roll-up. How many things are going to end in a roll-up when they just beat the hell out of each other and I just can't get out of the roll-up? I don't know. Got to end on a little bit of a small rant, but overall, guys, I really do enjoy what's happening in WWE right now as a whole. We get past the just awful, awful Money in the Bank ladder matches, and now we get into some true wrestling. And to see Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak have a wrestling clinic was a nice palate cleanser. So I know many of you probably looked at that and said, oh, it's so boring. Oh my God, what are they? They're just like rolling around. What is this? Where's the punches and kicks? You're probably of the newer generation of fans that look at wrestling as a silly, I'm not really emotionally invested. It's just cool kicks, flips, and cool moves rather than in-depth characters and stories that you care about that make pro wrestling great. That's what makes any damn television or any movie great, for that matter. I mean, would you want to just see senseless action with no story to it? Think about that as a movie. It'd be visually kind of cool to see, like fireworks, right? You say, ooh, what's next? What's next? Ooh, cool fireworks. But you're not emotionally attached to fireworks. Is anybody really emotionally attached to fireworks? It's just kind of like, what's next? Cool, cool. It's always about what's next. What's the next big firework? What's the next big move? That's how I feel about pro wrestling and how superficial today's wrestling is, because it's all about the athleticism and the cool moves and having great matches rather than what makes wrestling great. And that's in-depth characters with thought-out stories and executed well. That's what makes pro wrestling great. And so I think today's fans have just been brainwashed as to what wrestling should be and why it's entertaining by doing all the silly the silly crap that they did at Money in the Bank. So, all right, end rant. I'll end there. For those of you that say I want to complain all the time, go ahead and tell me. It's not the case. If you listen to the show, I actually praise WWE the majority of the time in terms of minutes that I spoke. So, all right, well, thank you guys for listening. You can hit me up on Twitter at the WWE Podcast if you agree, disagree. You can also get yourself on the show if you want to send me a quick voice memo from your phone. You can send it to my email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You can get your rant or question in by doing that. You can also go to my website. You know what that is. You can also get an ad-free experience at Patreon. You all know the deal. It's the same stuff. But I'll be back on Tuesday with your Raw review, and then of course the schedule for the rest of the week is Nostalgia and AEW and NXT and a new voice for SmackDown coverage next week. So keep that in mind. We're going to have a co-host here to cover SmackDown for you guys, so I'm excited to be able to bring that to you this coming week as well. And hope everyone's doing well. I think the weather's warming up for the majority of us. It's finally spring here in the Northeast after snow last weekend. I'm not kidding. So thank you guys, everybody, for listening. It's much appreciated. Go subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you have a podcast if you like us. And I will, of course, talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.